The Chimes was written just a year after Charles Dickens' more famous A Christmas Carol, and it tells the story of Trotty Veck, a humble man who, on New Year's Eve, learns in an extraordinary way how important love and hope are to life.
My friends, the old year is soon to end. The patient year has lived through the reproaches and misuses of its slanderers and faithfully performed its work. Spring, summer, autumn, winter. It has laboured through its destined round and now lays down its weary head to die. Look at the streets, my friends. The streets full of motion. The shops decked out gaily. The new year is waited for with presents, welcomes, and rejoicings. Is there an allegory here, my friends? An allegory for the poor man in the fading year? And can he see it, the poor man I see in my mind's eye? Old Trotty Veck.
Sheath, they call me Trotty on account of my trotting, which I do uptown and downtown and every part of town, in sun and rain and snow and wind and hail. Takes more than a dose of weather to stop Trotty Veck. And I'll deliver you letters, and I'll deliver you parcels, and I'll fetch things, and I'll carry things, and I'll never stop. I can fetch anything and carry anything and take it anywhere. That I can. That's why they call me Trotty. Though I was christened Toby. And that's how I live and earns enough to feed myself and my daughter Meg. Only today, it has to be said, there's not much of the trotting. More of the waiting this day. It being New Year's Eve and there being not many as wants to run in of errands. So that's what I'm doing. Waiting here. Where I always wait. Just outside the church door. And a breezy, goose-skinned, blue-nosed, red-eyed, stony-toed, tooth-chattering place it is to wait in, too. And here come the chimes.
Listen, my friends. Listen to the chimes. The first quarter is about to begin. The first quarter of this hour we're about to spend together.
Right, here they come. Regular as clockwork. Which isn't that surprising, since they undoubtedly is clockwork. And seeing as the last time they struck an hour, they struck 11, so now they're going to strike 12.
The Chimes by Charles Dickens. Dramatised by John Clifford.
Told ya. And 12 means dinner time. And there's nothing more regular in its coming round than dinner time. And nothing less regular in its coming round than dinner. It took me a long time to find that out. And I wonder whether it would be worth anyone's while to buy that observation for the newspapers. Because it is undoubtedly true. On the other hand, the newspapers are full of observations already. So maybe they couldn't do with another one. Especially not coming from someone as poor as us. When the poor, the papers keep observing, are the cause of so much misery and so many problems in the world. It seems like we can't go right or do right or be put right. We just seem to be the most dreadful trouble. We're always being complained of or guarded against. Talk of a new year. Talk of a happy new year.
Father? Father?
Bright eyes. Eyes that would bear a world of looking in before their depth was fathomed. Eyes beaming with hope so buoyant, so vigorous and bright, despite the 20 years of work and poverty on which they had always looked. The eyes of his daughter Meg.
Have we got a right to a happy new year? Have we got a right to any new year at all?
Father, what's the matter?
Nothing's the matter, pet. I was just thinking about dinner.
And of how there isn't any.
Of how there isn't any sometimes, my pet. But there's you. And you're better than any dinner. And all the better for being a surprise, for I wasn't expecting you at all.
Well, here I am, Father. And not alone.
Not alone? Well, who's with you?
It's not who, Father. It's what. Look at the basket, Father. Look at the basket.
You don't mean to say.
Just smell it, Father. Smell it. No. Not all at once. Don't open the basket all at once. Lengthen it out a little. Enjoy it.
Enjoy it? I can hardly believe it.
Just lift a little corner, Father, and guess what's inside.
Let me see. It's hot. It's scalding hot.
So what is it, Father? You have to guess. You haven't guessed yet. What is it?
It's polonies?
No, Father, it ain't. It's nothing like polonies.
Then it's liver. No. There's a mildness to it that don't answer the liver. I know it's not sausages. It's not cock's head, neither. I'll tell you what it is. It's chitterlings.
No, it ain't.
But I'll be forgetting my own name next. It's tripe. Yes, of course it is.
And the best tripe you ever tasted, Father. You'll see it is. And I've brought it in a basin and tied the basin up with a pocket handkerchief and put a couple of potatoes in there beside and half a pint of ale in a bottle. And where will you eat it, Father? On the post or on the steps? Oh, how grand we are to have two dining places to choose from.
The steps, my dear. Steps in dry weather, post in wet. There's a greater convenience in the steps because of the sitting down. But in the wet, it's rheumatic.
Steps it is, Father. Come on, sit down. It's all ready. Sit down.
Amen.
Amen to the bells, Father.
They broke in like a grace, dearest. And now I can eat.
They talk to you, don't they?
Every day, dear Meg. Every day. Or at least they seem to. And what does it matter if they actually do or not? Just so long as I hear them. Right. The number of times I've heard them say, Toby Veck, keep a good heart, Toby Veck. And when things are bad, very bad, I mean, you know, the worst, they say, Toby Veck, job coming soon, Toby. Job coming soon, Toby Veck.
And it comes always, Father.
After a bit, yes. It always comes. Always. But, Meg, my love, why didn't I tell you what a beast I was?
You? A beast?
A proper beast to be sitting here and cramming and stuffing and gorging myself. And you standing here hungry without so much as breaking your precious fast.
But I have broken it, Father. Broken it all to bits. I've had my dinner.
Nonsense, daughter. Two dinners in one day. Two dinners in one day. It ain't possible.
Oh, but it is, Father. It is. And it's happened.
How? How's it happened? Such a miracle.
You eat your dinner, Father. And I'll tell you how come I've had mine. And I'll tell you where yours came from. And I'll tell you something else besides.
And what might that be, Meg? What might that be?
I had my dinner, Father, with Richard. He brought his dinner with him when he came to see me. And we had it together, Father.
Oh?
And Richard says, Father...
What does Richard say, Meg?
Richard says...
Richard's a long time saying it.
He says another year is almost gone. And what's the use? What's the use of waiting when we'll never be better off than what we are now? He says we're poor now and we'll be poor then. But we're young now, and years will make us old before we know it. And how hard, Father, to grow old and think how we might have made each other happy. So Richard says, as his work was made certain for some time to come, and as I love him and he loves me, will I marry him on New Year's Day?
Tomorrow?
Yes, Father, tomorrow. The best and happiest day in the whole year, and one that's sure to bring good fortune with it.
It's very quick.
Oh, I know it's short notice, Father, but it's not like I've a wedding dress to be made, or a fortune to be settled on me like a lady. And he said it all the way he does, Father. Strong and kind and earnest. And I said I'd come and talk it over with you. And as they paid me for that piece of work I did, and I know you've had a hard week of it, I just couldn't help wishing this would be a kind of holiday to you, as well as a happy day to me. And I brought you a treat to surprise you.
And see how he leaves it cooling on the step, as if he didn't like it.
Richard?
A handsome young man, with a face that glowed like the red-hot iron on which his sledgehammer daily rang. And Trotty would certainly have replied, only the door opened unexpectedly.
Out of the way, he's here now.
And the footman very nearly put his foot in the tripe.
You must always go and be sitting on our steps, won't you? Now, will you clear the road or won't you?
Oh, then what's the matter?
Alderman Cute, a gentleman upon the smooth downhill of life.
You're always being begged and prayed to let our doorstep be. Why don't you let him be? Can't you let him be?
There, that'll do, that'll do. Now, you, porter, come here. What's that? Your dinner?
Yes, sir.
Don't leave it there. Bring it here, bring it here.
Yes, sir.
A comfortable gentleman, accompanied by a thin, low-spirited man of middle age and disconsolate face.
Mr. Filer, what is this? He calls it dinner.
This, Alderman, this is a kind of animal food, commonly known to the labouring people by the name of tripe.
Tripe, eh? Tripe.
Tripe is, without exception, the least economical and most wasteful article of consumption that the markets of this country could possibly produce. The loss upon a pound of tripe has been found to be 7/8 of a fifth more than the loss upon a pound of any other animal substance whatsoever.
Oh, shocking, shocking.
The waste, the waste. And who eats tripe? Who eats tripe?
I do, sir.
You do, do you? And then I'll tell you something. You snatch your tripe out of the mouths of widows and orphans.
I'd rather die of hunger, sir, than do any such thing.
Divide the amount of tripe aforementioned by the estimated number of existing widows and orphans, and the result will be 1 pennyweight of tripe to each, and none for that man. Consequently, he's a robber.
And what do you say?
Nothing. Mm. He says nothing. There's nothing he can say. Look at him.
Bad. We are born bad.
I can prove it by tables.
Now, you, porter, you listen to me. Don't you ever go telling me or anybody else that you haven't always got enough to eat, because I know better.
Widows and orphans.
Precisely, friend Philo, precisely. You see, there's a great deal of nonsense talked about want and widows and orphans and that kind of thing, and I intend to put them down.
Yes, sir.
And who's that?
My daughter, sir.
Where's her mother?
Dead, sir.
Dead?
Called up to heaven when she was born.
Killed her own mother.
And you, sir? You making love to her?
We're to be married tomorrow.
Married? Married? The ignorance of the first principles of political economy. The improvidence. The wickedness. Look at them. They've no right or business to be married, and we can prove it. Mathematically. With tables.
Now listen to me, my girl, because I am going to give you some advice. It's my business to give advice, because I am a justice of the peace. You know that, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Now, you are going to get married, you say. Most unbecoming and delicate for one of your sex. And after you're married, you'll quarrel with your husband and come to be a distressed wife. And you will, because I've told you so. And I give you fair warning, because I have made up my mind to put distressed wives down. And you'll have children, boys. And these boys will grow up bad and run wild in the streets without shoes or stockings. And I'll imprison every one, for I am determined to put boys without shoes and stockings down. Put them all down, every one. And your husband will die young, and you'll be turned out of doors and wander up and down the streets. And don't you think of wandering near me, my dear, for I am resolved to put all wandering mothers down. And if you attempt... desperately, ungratefully, and fraudulently attempt to hang yourself or drown yourself, you'll find no pity from me, for I have made up my mind to put all suicides down. Now be off with you. Be off with the pair of you.
And off they went, not arm in arm or hand in hand, but she in tears, and he gloomy and down-looking. The good Alderman Cute, he had put them down.
And as for you, porter, you shall carry a letter for me. Can you be quick? You're an old man. How old are you?
I'm over 60, sir.
This man has no business to be over 60. That's well past the average age, you know.
Oh, never mind that. You see, I'm very good-hearted. Take the letter.
Where am I to take it to?
The address is on the envelope.
Above average age, below average intelligence.
Here's sixpence for your trouble, and take care of that daughter of yours. She's much too handsome. She'll come to no good.
I can prove it by tables.
I'll be off with you.
Wrong every way. Wrong every way.
The second quarter begins, my friends. The second quarter of the hour. And the chimes held no encouragement for Trotty at all.
Put them down, they're saying. Put them down. Facts and figures. Prove it by tables. Put them down. Put them down. I have no business here. No business with the new year or anything here. Put me down. Put me down.
It was a hard frost that day. The wintry sun looked brightly down upon the ice it was too weak to melt, and set a radiant glory there. At other times, Trotty might have learnt a poor man's lesson from that wintry sun, but he was past that now.
Yes?
It took the footman a long time to find his voice, for it was a very long way off, hidden under a load of meat.
Do you have any business here? This is the house of Sir Joseph Bowley, M.P., Member of Parliament.
Letter for Sir Joseph.
Oh, you'll have to take it in. Everything goes straight in. That way.
Another knock to knock at. No end of doors to knock at. Are most of them closed?
Come in.
What is this?
Exactly.
Mr. Fish, have the goodness to attend.
A letter for Sir Joseph.
I beg your pardon, sir. It's a letter, sir, from Alderman Cute.
Is that all?
Yes, sir.
You have nothing else?
No, sir.
No bill or demand upon me? If you have, present it. There's a cheque-book by the side of Mr. Fish. I allow nothing to be carried over into the new year, so that if death was to... sever my cord of existence, my affairs would be found in a state of preparation.
My dear Sir Joseph, you shock me.
My Lady Bowley, this is the season of the year when we should think. Think of...
Our accounts?
Ourselves, sir. We do not think of our accounts, we look into them. We feel that this so eventful period in human transactions involves a matter of deep moment between a man and his...
Maker?
His banker, sir. His banker.
Quite so.
And as for you, Porter, how are your accounts? How do you stand before your divine banker? You can speak to me. Speak to me quite freely. I am a friend of the poor, famous for it. Now, the design of your creation is not that you should swill and guzzle and associate your enjoyments brutally with food, but that you should feel the dignity of labour. Do you feel the dignity of labour, my friend?
When I gets it, sir.
Go forth, erect into the cheerful morning air. Work hard, be respectful, bring up your family on next to nothing, pay your rent as regularly as the clock strikes, and you may trust me to be your friend and father.
Thank you, sir.
Now, Mr. Fish.
If I could point out, sir...
You're not thinking, are you, Fish?
No, sir. Merely holding. The letter, sir.
Oh, the letter. My lady, the alderman reminds me he's had the distinguished honour of meeting us at the House of Deedles, the banker. And he does me the favour of asking whether it would be agreeable for me to have one of our tenants put down. Will Fern. Will Fern?
A vicious man. An unpleasant man. An ungrateful man. Has he committed a robbery? I do hope so.
No, not quite. He came to London looking for work, his story, and was found sleeping in a shed. Our friend imprisoned him, quite rightly, but was forced to let him go.
More's the pity.
And now asks if, on the next occasion, it would be agreeable for me to have Will Fern put down.
Let him be made an example of.
Very well. Mr. Fish, write this down. Dear Alderman, etc., I am indebted, etc., William Fern is a turbulent and rebellious spirit. Nothing will persuade him to be happy as he ought. By all means, put him down, etc. And I am, etc., etc. And as for you, you will take the letter. But first of all, let me ask you, have you two made preparations for the new year?
Preparations, sir?
Yes, are your accounts in order? Are you at peace with the world?
I am afraid, sir, that I am a little behindhand with the world.
Behindhand with the world?
I'm afraid, sir, there's a matter of 10 shillings owing to Mrs. Chickenstalker.
To Mrs. Chickenstalker?
A shop, sir, in the general line. And also a little owing on account of rent.
Rent?
I know we shouldn't, sir, but times are hard.
No, nonsense. No, stuff and nonsense. How a man, even among this improvident, impracticable and generally useless class of the indigent poor, an old man, a man gone grey, can look a new year in the face in this deplorable condition, it is beyond me.
The letter, sir?
Take the letter and begone.
Sir.
Begone.
Begone.
For heaven's sake, begone.
Get out.
We're no good, you see. No good for anything. Put us down. Put us down.
And with that, Trotty delivered his letter as fast as he could, and he pulled his hat down over his head to hide the grief he felt at getting no hold on the old year anywhere. But then, what with his pace, which at best was awkward, and what with his hat, which didn't improve it, he trotted into someone in less than no time and was sent staggering out into the road.
I beg your pardon. I hope I didn't hurt you.
No, you have not hurt me.
Nor the child, I hope.
No, nor the child. I thank you kindly.
Don't go. Sir, you won't take it amiss if I... It's just your child looks so cold and you look so footsore and jaded.
You can tell me, perhaps. I'd rather ask you as any other. Tell me where Alderman Cute lives.
Why, close at hand. I'll show you his house with pleasure. I just delivered a letter there.
Well, I was to see him tomorrow, but I'm uneasy under suspicion and want to clear myself and be free to go and seek my bread. So perhaps he'll forgive me going to his house tonight.
I can scarce believe this, but it ain't possible, is it? It ain't possible that your name's Fern.
How do you know?
Fern! It is! Will Fern! Well, don't you go near that Alderman Cute. He'll have you put down.
Put down?
Put down for a vagrant and an ungrateful and a miscreant and I don't know what else. He's going to jail you for it. I just delivered a letter to him about you.
Jail me, was he? Well, I could bear it for myself, but not for this pretty one.
Oh, of course not. What's your name, pretty one?
Tell the gentleman.
Lily, sir.
She has a beautiful face.
Oh, yes. I've thought so many times. Many times when the cupboard was bare. Thought so last night when they took us like two thieves. She's my brother's child. An orphan. They were going to take her to the workhouse, but I took her instead. Her mother had a friend once, and we thought we'd find her and maybe find some work, too. It's a large place. Ah, that's all right for us, Lily.
Lily's cold.
No, Lily, we don't mind. More room for us to walk about in. So, I'll take your advice and thank you. I'll steer clear of this justice. That's what they call it. Justice. Well, good night. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. No, wait. I could never have a Happy New Year leaving you like this. I couldn't. I could never have a Happy New Year thinking of you two wandering away without a roof to your heads. I couldn't. Come on. Come on with me. No, you must come. You're worn out. I'll carry her. I will. I'll take her. You'll come to me, darling, won't you? Come to your new uncle, Trotty Veck. Your old uncle, Will Fern's all worn out.
I'll come.
You see Uncle Will? Oh, she's as light as a feather. Now, you see as you can keep up with me. This way. Round to the right. Past the pump. Sharp off to the left, opposite the public house. Here we are and here we go. Cross over. Mind the kidney pie shop. Just down the mews here, Uncle Will. And stop at the door with T-Vec Ticket Porter on the board. For that's who I am, and this is where I live. And here we are, Meg, surprising you, and with a child for you. And you'll run to Meg, won't you, darling? Meg will take good care of you.
Father, who is this? She's very welcome.
She's young Lily, and this is her uncle, Will Fern. And they'll be our guests tonight. And you've been crying too, poor child. But still, here we are and here we go. Uncle Will, here's a fire. Sit by it.
Father, I think you're crazy tonight. What would the bells say to that?
They'd say, put the kettle on and you'll have it boiling.
Oh, what poor little feet our Lily has. How cold they are. But now they're getting warmer.
Have it boiling in no time. And then, well, Meg, I think I saw a little tea lying on the stairs. And maybe even a little bit of bacon too. I'm not sure where they are, so I'll go and find them.
And so, with this inscrutable artifice, off goes Trotty to buy the food he spoke of, with ready money at Mrs. Chickenstalker's. And on his return, there being only enough for the man and the child.
Now, it's a curious thing, a very curious thing. Curious, but well known to my friends, that I never care myself for bacon, nor for tea neither. I like to see other people enjoy them, but to me, as food, they are very disagreeable. Mm. Now, some people say they smell good, but I've never understood that myself. Now, my pleasure is to watch other people eat them, especially people in want of sustenance themselves. Ain't that right, Meg?
You're right, Father. You're so right.
Never did spectators at a city dinner or a court banquet find such high delight in seeing others feast as those two did, looking on that night.
Now, I'll tell you what. The little one sleeps with Meg.
With Meg? With good Meg?
Yes, with good Meg. And as for you, Will Fern, you come along with me. You're tired to death. I'll show you the place. It's not much of a place, just a loft. But there's plenty of sweet hay up there. So cheer up, Will. Don't give way. A new heart, Will. A new heart for the new year.
And then the old man composed himself to mend the fire and draw his chair to the warm hearth. Then he took his newspaper from his pocket and began to read, carelessly at first, skimming up and down the columns, but with an earnest and sad attention very soon.
A young woman killed herself and her young child. Threw herself in the river, holding her baby. That's terrible. Terrible. Only people bad at heart, people born bad, could do such things. And that's what we are. Born bad. Put us down. Put us down. Yes, and that's what they're saying. No, they're not. They're not. They're saying something else altogether. Toby Veck, Toby Veck, waiting for you, Toby Veck. Drag him to us. Drag him to us. Haunt and hunt him. Haunt and hunt him. Break his slumbers. I can't bear it. I must go. I can't bear it. I really can't.
And before he knew it, he was out in the street and running down the road.
I'll just see. I'll see if the door is open. And the door will be closed and I'll be satisfied.
It was a low, arched portal in a dark nook, and had such great iron hinges and such a monstrous lock that there was more hinge and lock than door.
The door will be closed. I know it will. The door. But it's open. The door is open.
And before he knew it, he had begun to climb. Up, up, up. Round and round. Up, up, up in the deep, deep darkness. Up and up to where the bells are. Higher and higher, up ladders now, up, 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 higher and higher, until high, high above the housetops of the city, shadowy, dark and dumb.
The bells! The bells!
It was barely possible to make out their great shapes in the darkness, but there they were.
Hello!
Hello! Hello!
And the chimes began to sound the start of the third quarter. But he heard them not. High, high, high up there in the dizzying darkness, for he had fainted. How black are the brooding clouds! How troubled the deep waters of the ocean of dreams! Who knows when it was that Trotty seemed to wake? And as he sat up and looked in the awful darkness, he seemed to see in every bell a bearded figure of its spirit. Draped and hooded they were, shadowy and dark, gigantic, grave, and darkly watchful. And when they spoke, it was as though the sounds they made had no need to enter through his ears. It was as though they spoke directly to his troubled heart.
What visitor is this?
It's me, Trotty Veck.
Trotty Veck. Trotty Veck.
I thought my name was called by the chimes. I've listened to you, chimes, these many years. You have cheered me often.
And have you thanked us?
1,000 times.
How?
I'm a poor man. I could only do so in words.
And never done us wrong? Never done us wrong in words? You hesitate.
Because...
The voice of time cries to humankind, advance. Time is for your advancement and improvement, for your greater worth, your greater happiness, your better life. Who seeks to turn you back or stay you on your course does us wrong.
I'm sure I never meant to, sir.
Who puts into the mouth of time or us, its servants, a cry of lamentation for days of failure or of loss does us wrong. And you have done us that wrong.
But if you knew how often you'd kept me company and cheered me up when I've been low, and how you were quite the plaything of my daughter Meg when first her mother died and she and me were left alone, you won't bear us malice for a hasty word.
Who turns his back on the fallen and disfigured of his kind, who abandons them as vile, does wrong to heaven and humanity, wrong to eternity and wrong to time, and you have done us that wrong.
Forgive me.
Learn the truth of things. Learn it. Learn it from the creature dearest to your heart. And look.
A body on the ground. Motionless and crushed. A dead body. A dead body on the ground.
Your own.
My own?
You fell, you see. Fell from this high bell tower and were crushed and broken.
Crushed and broken.
Now, listen.
My funeral. And my Meg. Weeping. Weeping at my loss.
Your loss. Now look.
A freshly made grave. My name on the headstone.
Your grave. Now look.
The grave uncared for. The grave untended. The headstone smeared with grime.
Your headstone. Now look. 10 years have passed.
10 years?
Now go. Follow the thread. Follow the thread of time.
A bare room. A poor, mean room. Meg working.
Learn it from the creature closest to your heart.
My Meg working. Sewing in the twilight. With no light to help her poor, tired eyes. Someone with her. Someone younger.
Meg? How often you raise your head from work to look at me?
Lily! Grown up! And changed. How changed?
Oh, my looks so altered that they frighten you. You smile at that when you say so. You smile at that because you know it not to be true. And yet you never smile at me.
I do so. Do I not?
You smile now, but not usually. When you think I'm busy and don't see you, you look so anxious and so sad. And you were once so cheerful.
Do I make our weary life more weary still?
You have been the only thing that made it life. So many hours, so many days, so many long, long nights of hopeless, cheerless, never-ending work. Not to become rich, or live grandly, or in comfort, not even to live on enough, but to earn bare bread. To scrape together just enough to work and work again. Oh, Meg, Meg, how can the cruel world go round and bear to look upon such sad lives?
Oh, Lily, Lily, you too. You so pretty and so young.
Oh, Meg, that... That is the worst of all. Strike me, old Meg. wither me and shrivel me and free me from the dreadful thoughts that tempt me.
Lily, no. No, no. Gone. All gone. Where's Richard? He should be with her. He should be comforting her. Where's Richard?
Learn it from the creature closest to your heart. Follow the thread. Follow the thread of time.
And where am I now? Big house. Grand dinner. Alderman Cute.
Many happy returns, Lady Bowley, and happy new year.
Thank you.
I understand Sir Joseph is to play skittles. Skittles with his tenants. What magnificent condescension. Quite like old King Hal. Fine character.
Very. Above average number of wives. Murdered them.
And look at the boy, young Master Cute. We shall have this little gentleman in Parliament before he's turned 30.
Ah, the difference of shoes and stockings. And where's Richard? Show me Richard. Not him, not Mr. Fish.
Alderman Cute? My dear Alderman Cute, a little more this way, dear sir. What I have to say is for your ears alone. Dreadful intelligence. The most frightful and deplorable event.
Fish, whatever's the matter? Nothing revolutionary, I hope.
Deedles. Deedles the banker. Shot himself.
Good God.
Put a double-barreled pistol to his mouth. In his own counting house.
Lamentable. One of the most respectable men I ever knew. I shall wear the deepest mourning.
No talk of putting down now, Alderman Cute. No talk of putting suicide down now. The difference a little respectability makes.
It's almost enough to make one think, if one didn't know better, that some motion of a capsizing nature was going on in things. Deedles, by his own hand. Such a respectable man. What is this?
Will Fern.
Who gave this man admittance?
So much older and greyer.
This is a criminal from prison, Mr. Fish.
One moment, sir. One moment, my lady. You were born on this day along with the new year. Give me a minute's leave to speak.
No, no, no.
Oh, let him speak, Alderman Cute. The worst he can do is be dull.
Thank you. Lady, I thank you. Gentle folks, look at me. Just come from jail, and not for the first time, nor the second, nor the third, nor yet the fourth.
You should be ashamed of yourself. Four times imprisoned is quite unreasonably above the average.
Let me say a word, and let the real truth be spoke for once to you, gentlemen, and you ladies who pass judgment on the likes of me. And you see one like me, with discontent writ on his face, you says he's suspicious, that Will Fern. You watch him, and that means whatever that Will Fern does or doesn't do, it goes against him, because the law, your laws, gentlemen, are set up to catch and trap the likes of me. I tried to live elsewhere, caught like a vagabond, to jail with him. So, comes back here, I goes looking for food in the woods, and I breaks a branch or two. To jail with him. One of your keepers sees me in broad day with a gun. What, to jail with him? It's 20 mile away, that jail. And on the way back, I begs a little on the road. So, to jail with him. And now, when anybody finds me anywhere and doing anything, it's to jail. Again and again. So jail's the only home I got. Now, you can't give me back the years I lost. And you can't give me back the niece I lost, nor the home I lost neither, but gentlemen, gentlemen, begin at the other end. Give us better homes when we're lying in our cradles. Give us better food when we are working for our lives, and don't set jail, jail, jail before us everywhere we turn. And you do that before you lost us all. For good, before we burn down the houses that you live to oppress us.
And he's gone. They've all gone. But where's Richard? Where's Richard?
Learn it from the creature closest to your heart. Follow the thread. Follow the thread of time.
Meg's room. A poor mean room. And Meg working. Meg, I wish you could hear me.
You look so sad and tired. I wish I could comfort you. Say a few words, Meg, that you could hear and could make you feel better. But where's Lily? Where is she? There's her frame. There's the frame she worked on. And there's the chair she sat on. But the frame's been covered up. And the chair's been put to face the wall. Why history? Why history in these sad small things? And my Meg's grief-stricken face. Oh, I wish I couldn't read it.
Come in.
And there's Richard. There's Richard at last. But how he's changed. How he slouches. And the smell of drink. The smell of drink from him.
Can I come in?
Come in. Come in. Sit down.
And he sits. And he stares. Stares at nothing at all. And she cannot bear to see him. She turns away.
Still at work?
Still at work.
You work late?
I generally do.
And early?
And early.
Lily said you did. She said you're never tired or never admitted it. Not even when you fainted from weariness.
So you told me last time.
Did I?
Have you forgotten?
I try to forget everything, Meg. Everything.
And I begged you to tell me nothing more about her. Or about the life she leads now. And you promised.
Did I? Did I promise?
Yes. So don't tell me. I can't bear to know.
Dear Meg. Good Meg.
She haunts me, Meg. She haunts me. She comes behind me in the street. She thrusts it in my hand. She whispers, Richard, don't look round. Give her this. For heaven's love, give her this. Look at it, Meg. Look at it.
Hide it. Hide it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see the money she earns and think she may be doing it for me.
Oh, she says...
Don't tell me. I don't want to hear what she says. Only tell her. Tell her I love her and I think of her. Tell her I think of her every minute of every day. Go. Go.
Meg. Dear Meg. Don't cry. Please don't cry. Can't hear me. Can't hear me.
Imagine this, my friends. Imagine this as the last quarter is about to strike. Imagine this mean, wretched room, not so far from yours. This room... This cold, cheerless room where she sits and grieves. Sits and grieves for her lost friend.
Learn it from the creature closest to your heart.
But no matter what her mood, no matter how great her grief, no matter how great the torture of body or mind, she still must work. She still must work or starve. And so she works. Night, midnight. Still she works. And before she has time so much as to wonder who is there.
Lily. Lily, come in. Oh, dear heart, come in.
Look at this. Merciful heavens, look at this.
How thin you look. How pale. How cold. How cold you are, dear soul. Come in. Warm yourself. Here's my shawl. Take it, please. You remember how I cursed my beauty and I wished it gone. Well, it's gone now. All gone.
No.
No. I have fallen low, Meg. Fallen very low. So they tell me, those that preach at me. And I had to hear them, Meg. Had to. Otherwise, they won't give me anything to eat, you see. And I had to have something to eat. Because no one wants to buy you once the sores start showing and you have to eat, you have to. And that's how they got to preach at me about my wickedness and that. Not that it stops some of them using me sometimes.
Don't talk of it, Lily. You don't need to talk of it. You're here now. You're safe now, Lily, dear one.
What they forget, all them that preach at me... is the one in whose name they say they're preaching. He never condemned us. He never did.
He let one of us wash his feet. Wash his feet with her hair.
Now, Lily. Lily, my love, sleep here, love. Sleep. You're safe now. Sleep. Hush now. Hush. Hush.
Look at them, you respectable people, ready to pass judgment. Look at them and judge them if you dare. The last quarter. The last quarter of the hour. The last quarter of the old year.
Years have gone by. Years. In the twinkling of an eye. And where am I now? A warm room. Too warm. Smells of muffins.
I'm glad to think we had muffins. It's a sort of night that's meant for muffins. Likewise, crumpets.
You're in spirits, Tugby?
A little elevated, Mrs. T, just a little elevated.
Mrs. Chickenstalker. And she's married. She's married Sir Joseph Storman.
A little shop, quite crammed and choked with the abundance of its stock. A voracious little shop with a maw as full as any shark's.
So, it's a hard night, is it, Mrs. T?
Blowing and sleeting and threatening snow.
Yeah, yours are like people in that respect. Some of them a day hard, and some of them a day easy. This one's making a fight of it. Unlike him up the stairs. Oh, there's a customer, Mrs. T. Attend to him, attend to him.
Now then, what's wanted? Oh, I beg your pardon, Doctor. I didn't think it was you.
A shabby man in black who sat down astride the beer barrel. A medical attendant upon the poor.
This is a bad business upstairs, Mrs. Tugby. The man can't live.
Just what I've been telling you, Mrs. T. The back attic can't live.
The back attic, Mr. Tugby, is coming downstairs fast.
Exactly what I've been telling Mrs. T. The back attic is going.
And very soon he'll be below the basement.
And what I've been saying is this. He must be going before he's gone.
I don't think you can move him. You'd better leave him where he is.
Leave him where he is?
He'll be gone very soon.
Exactly. That's just what I've been telling Mrs. Tugby. He's going to die here upon the premises.
And where else should he die?
In the workhouse. What else the workhouse is for? Oh,
not for that, Mr. Tugby. And neither did I marry you for that.
But think of the inconvenience.
Don't think it, Tugby. Don't think it. I won't have it. I knew him as a handsome young man, and I knew her as the sweetest girl eyes ever saw. And I knew her father fell from the steeple, poor man, walking in his sleep. I knew him, I say, as the simplest, sweetest-hearted, hardest-working man that ever drew the breath of life. And if I ever turn them out of house and home, may angels turn me out of heaven, as they would, and serve me right.
Oh, bless you, Mrs. Chickenstalker. Bless your heart.
We should go up.
A strange procession going up the shabby stairs. The medical attendant first, all dressed in black, and Mrs. Tugby next, with fat Mr. Tugby panting at the rear, and poor Trotty floating above them, his heart beating painfully, in his ear the cruel, insistent voices of the bells.
Learn it from the creature dearest to your heart.
And there she is, haggard, weeping, clutching a baby child. Oh, God, God be thanked, she loves the child. She loves the child.
There, his heart stopped, his pain's over. It's better as it is.
Not a cruel man, but accustomed, witnessing such scenes every day.
Dear soul, don't take on so.
They mustn't give way. That won't do. Fight up. We must all fight up.
And I wait in the poor, mean, freezing room, and I look up at her face, at her dear face so worn down by suffering, and I listen for at least a trace of her old pleasant voice.
And he watches, and he waits, and he flits around the child, the poor one child, so old before its time, so dreadful in its gravity, so plaintive in its feeble, mournful, miserable wail.
But she loves it. God be thanked, she loves it.
And he goes with her as she tramps the streets, the cold, pitiless streets of London, searching for work, for anything to save her child from starvation. And back in the room one night.
Will Fern.
For the last time.
What have you done?
Look at the sky. I look at the burning. I wanted to see you one last time. Is that your child? Oh, let me hold your child. Is it a girl? I want her. Oh, what's her name?
Margaret.
I'm glad of that. Margaret. Here, take her. I held the same face in my arms when Lily's mother died and left her.
When Lily's mother died and left her?
Meg, I thank you. I thank you for the last time. Goodbye. Tell me you'll forget me. Goodbye.
Will.
But it is love. She still loves it. She'll never stop loving it.
Like Lily, when her mother died and left her.
Poor Meg. My poor Meg.
The next day was the last day of the old year, and once more she spent it being harried from here to there, looking, hopelessly looking for some way to feed her child. And when she came back that night, there was a man blocking the door.
You've come back, have you? Know that you've lived here long enough without paying rent? Suppose you try and find yourself another lodging. Don't you think you could manage it?
It's very late. I'm very tired. But tomorrow.
You see, this is the last night of the old year. I wonder you ain't ashamed of yourself to want to carry ill will and quarrelings into the new year. Now, be off with you.
Learn it from the creature closest to your heart. Follow her to despair.
But she loves the baby. She still loves the baby.
Like Lily when her mother died and left her. Like Lily. Like Lily.
Where's she going? Not to the river. Surely to God, not to the river.
Like Lily when her mother died and left her.
Learn it from the creature closest to your heart.
Oh, my father. Turn her back. Turn her back. Dear God, turn her back from the river.
The rolling river, swift and dim, where scattered lights upon the banks gleam sullen red and dull, like torches burning there to show the way to death.
Stop her! Stop her!
Learn it from the creature closest to your heart.
I've learned it! Stop her! I've learned not to judge the mothers who, in desperation, kill their children and themselves. Have mercy, you who pass judgment on us. Have mercy on us.
And he holds her now. He holds her with a giant's strength.
I see the spirit of the chimes. I know happiness is our inheritance. I know there is a sea of time will rise one day, and all who oppress us or wrong us will be swept away like leaves. I can see it on the flow. I know that we must trust and hope and never doubt ourselves or doubt the good in one another. I have learnt it from the creature dearest to my heart, the creature I hold tight in my loving arms. Spirits of the bells, spirits merciful and good, spirits of the bells, I am grateful.
Father, all I can say is that's the last time you eat tripe. How you've been going on?
What? Going on? Where am I?
You're sitting in your own chair in front of your own fire, you silly.
My own fire? My own daughter?
And I'm just going to kiss her too, because the first kiss of Meg in the new year is mine. I've been waiting outside the house to hear the bells and claim it. Meg, my lovely wife. Happy New Year.
My own Richard, the New Year. And tomorrow's your wedding day.
Today, Troy. We're getting wed today.
Oh, silly father. Oh, listen to the chimes.
Ringing in the New Year and you getting married.
Great bells they were. melodious, deep-mouthed, noble bells. When had they ever chimed like that before?
Dear daughter, dear loving daughter. And here's little Lily. Here we are and here we go. Little Lily come out to wish us a happy new year.
Happy new year.
Here we are and here we go. And Uncle Will too.
Happy new year.
Oh, Uncle Will, the visions I've had concerning you. And how glad I am you came here, Will Fern, my good, good friend.
Happy New Year!
Happy winter!
It's got bad. Your daughter's going to be married.
And because everyone knows you, wishes you well.
And because everyone knows her, wishes her well.
And because everyone knows him, wishes him well.
We thought we'd all come in and wish you all the happiness a new year can bring.
Yes. Here we are to play it in and dance it in together.
Thank you. Neighbours, thank you. And a happy new year! Happy new year!
And did Trotty dream? Or are all his joys and sorrows and the actors in them but a dream? Himself a dream, like the teller of this tale, and the listener of it too. But remember, listener, remember the place these dreams come from. The stern place, the pitiless place, the place of injustice and sorrow, and try to make it a kinder, warmer, gentler place. And may the new year be happy for you, happy for all of us, and may each of us not be denied our share of the happiness our great Creator made us to enjoy. Farewell. God bless. God bless.
The Chimes by Charles Dickens was dramatised by John Clifford. Trotty Veck was played by Ron Cook. Sir Joseph and Mr. Filer by Sean Chapman. Richard and Mr. Fish by Luke Jardine. Alderman Cute and the Doctor by Paul Jesson. Meg by Helen Longworth. Lady Bowley, Mrs. Tugby and Lily by Isabel Middleton. Will Fern and Mr. Tugby by Nicholas Murchie. And Charles Dickens by Sean Murray. The Chimes was directed by Gaynor McFarlane.